Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB AMYZF, and Frankfurt ID4. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
You're listening to HowStreet.com Radio, available online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. Welcome to HowStreet.com Radio, the online source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is market historian Bob Hoy. He's the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. He's speaking to us from Vancouver. Welcome back to the show, Bob.
Yeah, Jim, good to be with you and with our listeners on this Friday morning.
Bob, we have a listener question from Willem Gruters. And Willem asks us about ancient, well, I wouldn't say ancient gold, gold in the not too far past. Does Mr. Hoy have data on what the gold-silver ratio did between 1870 and, say, 1910, or what the yield curve did in that same time frame? Because it seems to him that those three metrics would give you a good idea about how the U.S. economy fared in that time frame, and I guess then we can extrapolate how that might apply to modern times. So yeah. What happened to the gold-silver ratio between 1870 and 1910?
Yeah, well, I prefer to look at it as the gold-silver ratio, and it typically goes down during a boom and up during the contraction, whereby silver underperforms gold. It's I've got it traced back for hundreds of years, and where you have the ratio posted annually in the context of financial or political history, that's generally the way it works. The gold-silver ratio goes down in the good times and up in the bad times.
So what does the current gold ratio, gold-silver ratio, tell you about what kind of times we're in right now?
Yeah, silver's it's moving really quite substantially quickly in the last few weeks, and I've been watching it just to see how far this particular move goes. But in the past, when you have had a silver declining rapidly to gold, it has anticipated a financial crisis. So here we are in late May. This is a heads up. You don't know what the delay is on when there's trouble, but the move, I think, is distinguished enough to say for a heads up on what's happening, on the party coming to an end. And then also the old ancient one, the Dow theory, with the transports underperforming the industrials, it has given an ancient Dow theory sell signal on the big market. So, yeah, there's some very interesting things going on out there.
Now, we'll take a look at some of the headlines that caught your eye. U.S. new home sales tumble in April. Do new home sales tell us how the economy's doing, or is this fear of higher interest rates?
Oh, no. It's an economic series. Yeah, new home sales tumbled. People are not eagerly buying. Perhaps the mortgage rates and zooming up are a deterrent, and that's, you know, it's business cycle stuff.
And there's a related headline, U.S. homeowners with adjustable mortgages face a $1,000 a month jump.
Yeah, no, that's the problem in having a mortgage rate that is variable. And, of course, looking over our shoulders, it's best to, when mortgage rates were low, to have locked them in. And but that time has gone by, and this is again a hit to ordinary folks.
Well, I recall with my family, we locked in our stuff at 10 years at a time because we wanted to know what we had to budget for. and didn't want to have to deal with it, even though interest rates were low at the time. You know, another 1% gave us, I guess, security and stability.
Yep.
Now, from Breitbart Business Digest, what goes up might just keep going up. I guess they're permanently optimistic.
Yeah. Well, you look at some of these stocks and the Magnificent Seven. Oh, I wrote yesterday, the Magnificent Seven stocks have become the eighth wonder of the world. I had some fun with that one. And oftentimes, you know, the old saying, sell in May and go away. Hey, it could be valid this year. It actually, there's a long history back to it that with the great financial bubbles, as they occurred in London, when it was the financial center and sterling was the senior currency. So you're not talking about minor exchanges. You're talking about the real thing. Is that the South Sea bubble peaked in 1720 and everybody was in love with the stock market. They were convinced it was going to straight up. But the South Sea bubble actually reached its best in that June of 1720. And as far as I can determine, in London, the all five other bubbles peaked in May of the year, and thus maybe sell in May and go away. And then when you had New York become an important market, it seemed to add on its own identification with a bubble like 1929 and 1873 peaking in that September, and then the markets rolling over and dying, and then leading to, of course, the 1873 to 1895 Great Depression. It was actually the first time the term Great Depression that I saw in the literature appeared in about 1880, when British economists looked at the continuing weakness in the economy and came up with the description, Great Depression. And, of course, it ended in 1895, and then you went on the next long expansion and then into the usual war and high inflation with the First World War, and the inflation peaked in 1920 with commodity prices, and you had the hit, and then essentially a decade later, you had the great financial bubble. And when it failed, then you go into the severe, I'm going to call it a Great Depression. Yeah. And that's what's ahead of us here, I think. We're on the bubble around the world, the financial bubble, essentially peaked in early 2022 in New York. We're getting new highs in the S&P. Maybe that, Jim, that had something to do with the COVID lockdown, which was really quite an extraordinary event. And people that are just now, for the last year or so, been trying to get back to normal. But what we have here is the financial markets are saying we're heading for a contraction. And then you're getting detailed headlines like, hey, oh yeah, that when we new home sales tumble. And then there are other headlines of other economic series that collapse, plunge. We've got these kind of sensational, oh here, $100 million box office openers for Hollywood vanish this year. So, you know, things underneath the economy are creating headlines that say plunge or collapse. You got to pay attention to that stuff.
Sure. That Hollywood headline, $100 million box office openers vanish this year. Have they ever considered that maybe the movies they're making aren't very good? They're spending a lot of money on them, but there's no plot behind them.
When the public doesn't want woke, but Hollywood can't get out of its mission to transform society than entertain society.
Sure, because Hollywood did its best during bad times. People wanted to take their minds off
the 1930s, right? 1930s and 40s, yeah.
You know, you want to get out of the house and forget that you have no money.
Yeah.
And isn't it ironic, one of the best movies ever was, the song was We're in the Money. When nobody had any.
Probably.
Right. Another headline, to prevent a banking crisis, the Fed must cut. Does it? Really?
Oh, this is folklore. And I've got an essay written, especially for when rates start coming down. Here, if you look at hundreds of years of business history, short rates, that's just T-bills, go up during the boom. And then come the contraction, rates go down. And we found a nice chart from 1929, and, well, actually Ross put it together, and it shows that not only does the S&P go down as the T-bill rate goes down, but there are times when both plunge very fast together. So here we have it. We're fine. Interest rates are going to come down, and you have had your worst experiences in the financial markets when the T-bill rate falls. Now, that doesn't mean that all interest rates come down. I'm just talking about T-bill rates or call money, that sort of stuff. But what's going to happen is risk product, like junk bonds, they're going to get trashed. They're going to go down and, you know, defaults all over the place, that sort of stuff. And then there's also times when you can have prices falling, as you know, post-bubble deflation. And that doesn't help the long treasuries either. There are times when it just doesn't work. So all bond markets are precarious. Now, what we like to point out for investors is that you can put together, you got to go to a reliable bond trading desk, a dealer, and we're like the 3 to 4 year maturities in good grade corporate bonds. And if you're in deposits or T-bills, those things are going to head towards zero rate of interest. Whereas if you lock in a current rate of interest on a corporate, good grade corporate at 3 to 4 years, they're going to get paid off at par anyways as they mature. And so you'll get a higher yield and some risk, but not huge risk. And then for Canadian accounts, if you buy U.S. Corporates, your income's going to be in U.S. dollars, which could be very, very appealing. The Canadian dollar is going to continue on down. We're looking for around 73 now. We're looking for 68, which was the last severe low on the Canadian dollar.
Right. It's one of the reasons the Canadian dollar is falling is we have a federal government that doesn't believe in using our natural resources to boost it, i.e., natural gas sales, liquefied natural gas sales to Europe. They're begging for Canadian natural gas. Instead, they're proposing hydrogen that nobody's using right now.
Yeah, no, hydrogen is highly improbable as a fuel. What it comes down to, Jim, with the fuel, it's the density of the fuel. And the fuel with the greatest density, of course, is nuclear power. And they're coming along with modular new such plants. The next is you get into oil and gas. And you had political leaders from Europe visit Ottawa on Trudeau pleading for more compressed natural gas. And he said, no, he's shutting down oil and gas production where he can. Why? Because he's a puppet of the WEF, the World Economic Forum. And, of course, that's the outfit with Klaus Schwab, who says, you will own nothing and you will be happy. That's their major statement. And the connection to the WEF is quite close because a good friend of mine's nephew, David Morrison, has for the last 4 years or so been a special advisor to Trudeau in the Prime Minister's office. And about 20 years ago, David Morrison was a director of the WEF in Geneva. So Trudeau is there to conduct WEF policies into Canada. He is not there to head up a government that is acting for Canadians. It's evil, and it's, well, fortunately, it looks like the Liberal Party's going to die on the next election, and the next election is still next year, and that's a long ways away. And I think Trudeau just wants to stay in office because he's a very nasty man and do as much damage as he can before leaving. So Canada's in a hard place, whereas in the United States, early November, they'll have an election and get rid of most of the authoritarians and the new government headed up by Trump.
Now, you wonder how in touch Trudeau could be with the average Canadian. He's been rich his entire life. His personal wealth is estimated to be worth nearly $100 million U.S. Does he even know what inflation means to people, or what a, you know, just a $100 increase a month in food and fuel prices? For a lot of people, that puts them into a crisis.
Oh, yeah. No, he just doesn't get it. He's never been in that world. Plus, he's a willful man. He gets an idea he's going to do something, and there's no dissuading him. He just is there as one nasty dude who won't leave. Now, at some point, the Liberal Party of Canada has had a long heritage of doing the right thing for the party. It hasn't been the right thing for the country, but it's doing the right thing for the party. And somewhere, I think the Liberal Party has got to move to protect itself, which means they find a reason to retire Trudeau. And it can't happen, in my eyes, soon enough.
We'll have more with Bob Hoy right after this.
Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com.
Welcome back. We're speaking with Bob Hoy. Headline, hedge funds return to convertible bonds with checkered pass. Are these junk bonds?
Maybe they're even the checkered cab company. Checkered in this sense means doubtful past. And so again, the hedge funds are reaching for risk. That's what it is. It's all about risk. But the one I liked here was that the BlackRock, you know, it's the biggest fund that there is. And here's the headline. BlackRock's $20 billion ETF is now the world's largest Bitcoin fund. So what this is just in the last year, or even maybe less than a year, BlackRock, which is a huge fund, is buying Bitcoin. They didn't buy it 10 years ago. They're buying it now, and I think it's a form of madness about that. You know, it's like Druckenmiller, when he was a fund manager partner with George Soros in Quantum Fund, and that was the dot-com bubble that peaked in January. When was that? 1999. Anyways, when it peaked, he had been running part of the hedge fund and was competent, doing a good job. And, of course, in the office, there were a number of younger guys who were playing the dot-com bubble stuff, which was going straight up and you know, small capitalizations. So then he couldn't stand it any longer, and right at the top of the market put serious money into the dot-com bubble. Well, he was soon let go by Soros. But then Druckenmiller got a hold of himself and has got his own hedge fund thing going now and is probably doing a pretty good job with it. But it's you get these incredible things like this where BlackRock is buying Bitcoin at very high prices. Anyways, we'll see how it all goes.
Headline, cruel summer, consumer sentiment plummets as inflation fears grip the U.S.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Although the rate of CPI inflation, I think it got up to about 7 or 8%, and now it's coming down. Maybe in the next contraction it could get down to towards zero again, which usually happens in a severe recession. So, and then people get off of that and get worried about weak prices. But the main thing is all this is happening. The central banks can't do a thing about it, you know. I think eventually, Jim, the public's going to look at, let's say, the Federal Reserve and say, in hard times, and they're going to look at the Federal Reserve and say, look, you guys spent trillions of our tax money to prevent bad things from happening. And it's not working. And, of course, the only answer for a central bank is in the case of the U.S., the Federal Reserve System, it was a central bank that could not, when it was formed in the early 1900s, Americans had experience with a central bank, and there was bitter memories. So then they called it the Federal Reserve System, but it's still a central bank. And so the only way, you can't get rid of one, but you can discipline it by having the currency, the U.S. dollar, convertible into a fixed amount of gold. And then that really, to a large degree, limits the recklessness of central bankers. And I believe that's going to happen, Jim. I believe that the U.S. will go back to gold convertibility.
Headline, the start of de-dollarization, China's move away from the U.S. dollar. They've been doing that for a long time, haven't they, Bob? About a dozen years of buying gold, every piece of gold they can find?
The de-dollarization is the key to that headline. And those who don't have the senior currency hate whoever country has the senior currency, and it happens to be the U.S. now. And like you take the case of Argentina, every once in a while they complain about the strength of the U.S. dollar. Well, naturally they complain because they owe a whole lot of U.S. dollars into New York. And if you're going from servicing debt from a weak currency, which is the Argentinian, to a strong currency, which is the dollar, you got a problem. And that goes all the way back to 1550s when Gresham was advisor to the British Crown in the money market in Antwerp, and that part of his letters included that if you have, if sterling is weak relative to the guilder, you have a problem servicing debt. So he was, Gresham was very instructive. And this is what's happening now. Any of these countries that owe U.S. dollars payable on debt into New York, they got a problem.
Well, you say no wonder Argentina hates the U.S. dollar. Their inflation rate there is running at 175%. So if you owe American dollars, you've got nothing backing your currency to pay it off.
Yeah, no, it's difficult. Your governments just don't have the discipline, or rarely have had the discipline, to have a sound currency, which means convertible. Sure. England through the 1800s and into 1926 or something like that was on a gold standard, and it was bedrock solid. It was the way to do business is with the senior currency that was convertible into gold, because you know that the government couldn't screw you.
Are tariffs a good idea, Bob?
No, but it's a sign of a contraction. Once trade starts to slow down, individual countries get very protective. And then that was the case in the early 1930s. All of a sudden, U.S. Farmers were vulnerable to stuff coming over from Europe, and they came in with protectionist tariffs, and you can't send this in and all that sort of stuff. But it's part of the disaster of a post-bubble contraction.
Now, maybe bad news for people who are relying on the gig economy to get by?
Well, a Great Depression has a tendency to mess everything up.
Well, yes, this headline here, food delivery apps rack up $20 billion in losses in fierce battle for diners.
Yeah, well, I took a look at that and I thought, I never have anything. I have groceries delivered whenever for shopping, but like meals. And so what happens, these people have been having a quick delivery of a meal to home, they've been subsidized to the rate of, $20 billion. So they've been getting their food delivery at a lower price than the market cost. Another crazy item.
Well, yeah, the whole food delivery thing started when people were forced to stay home during COVID. You can go out now, but except with inflation, you're not going out to the restaurant as often because you can't afford the new higher prices.
Well, when you got a McDonald's burger package up to $18,
Well, a local pub here, their prices aren't much higher than that, but they serve you a quality meal instead of something that's may contain meat.
Yeah, well, a bunch of chemicals. A while ago, we went out to a favorite Mexican restaurant on 4th Avenue and Las Margaritas. Kind of like it.
That's a beautiful place.
And I thought the prices were okay, but before then, when under normal conditions, as you sat down, they would bring you water and a little tray of nachos and their own house dip. That was just part of the deal. So anyways, then when last went there, that little introductory service wasn't on, so you just ordered your meal. But I thought their prices hadn't been jacked up too much, and there was a server there a few years ago, slightly older than most servers, and turned out to be a really good guy. So I had said to him that, hey, where do you get the nachos from? He says, oh, the warming oven at the back. I said, no, I want to know. I said, I want to know because can I buy some to take home? He says, oh, yeah, for sure. So I had ordered a dish, and I'm kind of sensitive to hot, spicy foods. And then when he came by, I said, ooh, this stuff is really hot. He said, it'll help you with your Spanish.
Holy crap, holy, yes.
Yeah.
Caramba. Bob, always fun chatting with you.
Yeah, Jim, we've had a good time this morning and look forward to next week.
My guest has been market historian Bob Hoy, the chief investment strategist for chartsandmarkets.com. If you have any questions for Bob, you can send them to info@HowStreet.com. Our YouTube channel is Talk Digital Network. Find us on X at How Street. We're also on Facebook. I'm Jim Goddard. Thank you for listening.
Comments made on HowStreet.com radio are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any matter whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Available online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com. HowStreet.com radio is a production of HowStreet Media Incorporated.